The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Timothy Harvey for SciFiForMe.com, and you are listening to H2O. I am sitting across, very, very close, too close, way too close, Mr. Yes. Jason Hunt.
Hello.
We are in a slightly different configuration today.
Just slightly, yeah.
Because there's another person in the room.
Bum, bum, bum. And it's not the dog.
It's not the dog.
No.
No, it's
the intern.
It's the intern.
And we want to welcome Allie Ulrich.
Because interns have names.
Yes, because, and unlike over at Night Vale, our interns generally survive.
The track record so far is decent.
Yeah, we're betting 1,000 so far. Yeah. We've had one intern, one survivor.
As far as we know.
As far as we know.
And we haven't seen him lately.
Well, it's because he's been in Arizona.
Okay.
That's the story, right?
And we're sticking to it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we do want to welcome Allie to the team. She's here for the summer, and we're going to be throwing her into the deep end of the pool, doing lots of different things. You will see her byline over at scififorme.com, and we might even throw her on a microphone at some point, maybe. But hopefully she'll have a little bit more self-control than the subject of this week's discussion, Mr. Uwe Boll.
That's not going to be hard. He is not known for being a man who has held back.
So theglobeandmail.com actually did a count of the number of F-bombs he dropped in his last rant. 28.
Yeah, I believe it.
28.
I actually might have gone more, but I can see that.
Yeah. So for those of you who maybe somehow missed this, well, you tell it better than I do.
Oh,
let us know who Uwe Boll is.
So once upon a time, this German gentleman named Uwe Boll discovered that there's a way to use the German tax credit system and investors to get money to make movies, and it's turned out to be a pretty solid way of generating funds and being able to go off and make films. The problem is they're awful. There's no two ways around it. The man has not made a good film ever. And as Jason and I both are involved with the independent film community, we've had the good fortune to see many, many films at every level of production. We both have films that no one will ever see for good reason, because they're awful.
Yes, quite a few of those.
But the thing is that we are also blessed to have a really strong film community in this town. And so we get to watch a lot of these people get better and better and better and better and better.
And some don't.
But the thing is that, you know, you got to give, you know, at least you can say that Boll is consistent. Because it's crap from film one all the way up.
Do you remember? Now, at one point, he had gotten so tired of the criticism.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the boxing matches?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember? Yeah. He challenged anybody that wanted to criticize him to face off in the boxing ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, did anybody ever take him up on it? Was there something?
I think somebody did.
Was he trying to raise money for a project at that point, or was he just mouthing off and saying, hey, come fight me?
Well, I'm pretty sure that it's both. Let's see.
Let them fight.
Yeah, 2006. He would challenge his 5 harshest critics to a 10-round boxing match. Invitations were sent to Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery, who have been critics of his. Let's see. Richard Lotax, Kayanka, who I think works for something awful or wrote for something awful, website, and he became, I think, the first person to fight against him. RumOrg magazine writer Chris Alexander, Carlos Palencia Jimenez Arguello, who wrote for Seneca Culture, Ain't It Cool News writer Jeff Schneider, and
how many of those websites are still around?
Oh, good Lord!
Ain't It Cool is still around.
Is
RumOrg still around?
You know what? I'd have to look that up. I honestly don't know.
I don't think
I've seen anything from them in a while.
I haven't either.
Nothing's registered. Maybe they aren't. He won against all of them. He did.
Now, what does that say that at least half of those are people that we probably have not heard of, at least recently? We haven't heard from them in a while. And Uwe Boll is still around making movies.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And the other thing is you get, because we talk about the importance of story and telling a good story and all of the quality and everything.
Sure.
And he keeps cranking out this dreck.
Yeah.
And up until recently was making enough money that he can make another one.
Oh, sure.
And make another one and make another one. It's almost like The Asylum, but you made the point that the stuff that The Asylum cranks out is at least a little bit better.
Well,
terms of quality.
The Asylum is better in quality.
It's an assembly line production.
But it's also more fun to watch. I mean, they are Asylum films. And for those of you who have somehow missed the joys of an Asylum picture,
Sharknado,
among other classic films, Transmorphers, which I think was the one that really brought them to attention of everybody, which was their they make something called the Mockbuster, which is they hope that you will be confused by their similar cover art and almost identical name.
Yes.
Of the film,
isn't that the one that got them sued, or was it the Terminator?
I think it was the Terminator one. But yeah. When the Will Smith I Am Legend came out, they had I think it was Mark Dacascos did I Am Omega, things like that. So, the thing about the Asylum Pictures is that they're at least fun to watch in a. They're bottom level of B grade. I mean, if you're a fan of films from the 50s and 60s when they were cranking out stuff right and left, that was just, a lot of really, really fun science fiction films from the 50s and 60s are clear B grade pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a great fondness that a lot of people have for some of these films. And if you look at them objectively, they're not very good.
Yeah. Well, even, Tarantino, he's even said he likes, because he does the grindhouse stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's the drive-in movie type of film that you see. It's not the high-quality top dollar that you see in the first-run cinema for $12 a ticket.
But they're fun and kind of
cheap stuff.
Yeah, and in the horror genre, that was a whole subset of horror. They were fun, trashy films that you would take your girlfriend to, and she'd scream, and then she'd grab your arm, and you'd get a kiss later. If this was the 50s,
late
60s or 70s, there are other things in mind. But
I don't remember the 50s and 60s being that way. Oh, wait.
We weren't there, oddly enough.
probably the first time we can sit there and say that, right?
We weren't there.
we weren't there, though.
Oh, yeah. So there's something fun about some of these films that are just, they're not very good, but they're still fun. I mean,
yeah. And some of them actually got new life when Mystery Science Theater 3000 came out.
Oh, yeah.
And started doing their
shit. Yeah. I mean, you can't get around the fact that Manos Hands of Fate is awful, no matter what you do. But, because there's a place for that. Mm-hmm. I hate to say this because I'm in the independent film world, but there's a whole new crop of this stuff coming up because the many independent filmmakers have discovered, realized, or learned that getting a film distributed, if you can get it distributed, doesn't mean you're going to make any money.
Right.
And it could still end up being a money-losing proposition for you.
Mine has been so far.
Yeah. Well, so they've basically looked at a bunch of, they're releasing stuff online, and there's actually places out there that will show your film.
Speaking of which, did you see the deal that Netflix has picked up that next Brad Pitt's next movie.
Uh-uh.
It's based on the book about General McChrystal and his time in charge of the war operations in Afghanistan.
Oh, okay.
And originally, I mean, the book's written pretty straightforward, this is what happened sure. type of thing. Well, the movie has transmogrified into a satire, like you do.
Okay, sure.
And so,
yeah, hopefully in the tradition of something like MASH, where
yeah,
you can,
and,
you know,
and
find the humor in that
Brad
sort of thing.
Brad Pitt is going to play the McChrystal character.
Okay.
And it's going straight to Netflix. It's
well,
not gonna because you know yeah. It's a niche, it's
sure.
a niche audience, and so Netflix picked up the deal, and they're gonna distribute brand new, first run, never been seen in the theater stuff. It's a big step for them. I think they're paying something like $33 million for it.
That's actually
I mean, that's not a bad deal at all.
Probably a good deal, a really good deal.
And everybody went. Netflix is changing the game again.
Well, but you know, I think that yes.
But we digress. No, but it goes back to your point yeah. of distribution and finding other places.
Well, sure, but I think that's you know the
and it is cheap to make horror. All you need are blood packets.
Well, blood packets are girls willing to take her for a top and a knife. You do
knife.
Generally you should have a knife.
Sometimes a dog.
And yeah, well, and you need at least one person to almost make it to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
probably not the black guy.
No. Because if you're gonna stay with the tropes.
You gotta stay with the tropes. The tropes are everything. Well, see, and that's the thing. That's one of the things about Uwe Boll's movies is they're all tropes.
Oh yeah.
It's all stuff that's just rehashed and stuff that we've seen before. But of course, what in Hollywood isn't?
True. But the fascinating thing about Boll is that he lost money regularly. I mean, there was this was not something where you could go to your investors and say, yes, this was garbage, but look at the returns.
Yes.
It was, yes, this is garbage, but we lost $7 million, and yeah. you know,
we want to make another garbage.
Because I think the one that pretty much brought him in attention to the U.S. was House of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Based, he did a whole bunch of video game films, and ruined. Those video game film franchises, potential franchises for a lot of people. No one's going to touch House of the Dead.
Right.
Hugely popular shooter, arcade shooter. And
see, I never played that one. I was never big on first person shooters when I was growing up.
Well, you know what? My problem was that they're really repetitive for me. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm telling you, know, somebody who played Galaga for hours and hours and hours.
I sat on Asteroids forever.
Oh, sure.
I had one time. Oh, I was playing the home version of Asteroids,
mm-hmm.
and I got to the point where I had 23 extra lives. I was rolling in the points and bah, 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 and then I got called away to fold laundry, and I came back and I had 2 lives left because I couldn't stop the game. Then
this is
back in the day before you had pause.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had the
save
Atari 2600. Yeah, you
the
couldn't
invention
do that
of
back
save
then.
Points was just like yeah. really.
Speaking of which. Last weekend in Dallas, not last weekend, the weekend before last. Good night.
This year is tearing fat by, I know.
The search for the Atari 2600 has commenced.
Oh, wow.
I was in Dallas. I was visiting, managed to get around and visit my family. My mom thinks that our old Atari 2600, the original one, the first one,
mm-hmm.
is in the garage somewhere. So
is this one of those garages that's kind of like my parents' basement, which is you walk in and go, wow.
Yeah.
You have
all this
stuff.
Where do you park the car?
Okay,
yeah, we don't park the car. Yeah. No. Well, one side's open for the car.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is partly Dad's workshop, mm-hmm. you know, all of his tools
sure.
and stuff that he's accumulated over the last 50-some-odd years. And, you know, stuff, because there's there's my stuff. There's my sister's stuff. Because, you know, you go out and you go to college.
Sure.
You just, you uh-huh. know, you move back home and there's stuff. And then you move away. And there's, you know, it's stuff that accumulates. And it ends up in boxes and stuff. Well, there's still some boxes out there that got my name on it. And somewhere buried down in that pile, we think, is an Atari 2600. I want to find it. I so want to find it because I want to know if it works or not.
Oh, yeah. That'd be kind of cool.
Because my kid wants to see it. He was like,
oh, sure.
Because we sat and watched the the documentary on the E.T. video game a while back. And I was like, you know, I want to find that 2600 and see if it still works. Because if there's if we still have the game, we've probably got game cartridges. And if we have game cartridges, hope that they work. And then maybe we could find a video game cartridge out of that that maybe has fallen out of copyright. And we can go make our own Bayball movie. What do you think? See how I brought that around?
There you go. Very nice. Yeah. That'd be so cool to find. The fascinating thing about this guy is that he is, on one hand, I mean, the guy has gotten millions and millions and millions of dollars to go off and make these awful movies.
Yes, and he says now he has so much money he can go and play golf for the rest of his life.
Right, but he's got a... This whole thing sparked out of this whole Kickstarter campaign that he ran.
Yeah, which was a project he was running for Rampage 3. He was trying to raise money for that. This is the third crowdfunding project that he has attempted and failed.
Yes.
His first one, he was looking in 2013 to fund a sequel to Postal through Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
His goal was $500,000. He only raised $29,900 and canceled the project. And then he had the Rampage sequel that he tried to fund through Indiegogo, and that in 2 months just raised a little over $6,300.
Right.
So he tried Kickstarter again, and his goal was $55,000 and some change. Only raised $26,900, and he said, "Okay, that's it. I'm done.
And I'm taking my toys and I'm going home."
And there was much rejoicing.
Oh God!
Yeah, he's not going to be gone for long.
No, he's not going to
go away. This is half of this is publicity stunt.
Oh sure,
it's got to be. Because look at what's happening. We're all talking about Uwe Boll.
But there's also a certain amount of obliviousness to this guy. I mean, there's a legend in his own mind. There's an Ed Wood failure to comprehend the level of how awful you are. Or
unless he's awful on purpose.
Oh yeah, because I'm going to get. But here's the thing. Okay, I'm looking at a list of his films. Let's see. Blackwoods, I guess, was the first American one that people noticed. I haven't seen Blackwoods, and it's a horror film apparently. House of the Dead, 2003. Alone in the Dark, 2005. Blood Rain, 2000. He did Alone in the Dark. 2006. In the Name of the King.
Right.
Blood Rain 2, Deliverance. That's the one with the Nazis. No, wait. Blood Rain 2, Deliverance was the one with the set in
that was Vikings.
There was Westerns.
Oh, the where? Which one was Vikings? Was that the first one or the third one?
That might have been the first one. Somewhere in there, because Blood Rain, the Third Reich was 2010. But you've got Far Cry. Alone in the Dark 2.
Far Cry is a very popular video game.
It is a very popular video game.
Nobody will ever touch it.
Blubberella.
Oh, yeah.
In the Name of the King 2. Zombie Massacre, Assault on Wall Street, Blood Valley, Seek Revenge, In the Name of King 3. The Last Mission, we could only hope. Rampage, Capital Punishment was 2014. There is a long list of films here. This guy has, I mean...
He cranks them out. And the thing about it is, though, if either one of us had a third of the budget that he had for one of those, we could probably crank out a decent picture.
Oh, good Lord.
That would never find an audience because nobody knows who we are.
But, well, because we're not objectively horrible people.
That's the irony of it, is you've got people like him making these movies, and somebody's watched them for as long as he's been making them. Somebody's been watching them.
Sure.
And you and I, better filmmakers.
I would argue that. Yes.
We're better filmmakers. We know a lot of people that are better filmmakers. And maybe we're in the wrong town.
Well, like I said, he learned how to get the money and take advantage of the way that the German system works, which is good. I mean, that's it's an opportunity that we live in a state that does not have tax credits for film. And
Which really, yeah, and I've made the argument that really should not, I mean, I know it does, but it should not affect whether or not you can raise money for a film project.
Well, no, you're right. I don't think it should either, but I think that you run into a couple of things where you have, when you have it, that kind of tax credit, you end up building a trend with the studio is going to come to you, that state, and, mm-hmm. you know, oh, well, somebody else got it. And they said, oh, so then somebody else comes and somebody else comes.
Sure.
And so you have places like Louisiana, Austin is still doing a bunch of tax credit stuff too, I think.
I want to say that they've just reduced theirs.
It's possible.
Texas, I think.
Well, and it can backfire on you too, because Iowa used to have a really aggressive tax credit system, which mm-hmm. until they discovered that one of the guys running it was basically stealing from them, so they shut the entire thing down.
Well, and Michigan had a pretty robust program there for a while too, and mm-hmm. they've cut back quite
well,
a bit.
And I think that one thing that they're finding for is that you could argue that the return on your investment, tax-wise, tax mm-hmm. credit-wise, may not be as positive as the studio is going to want to sell it to you as.
Yeah.
And so there's some pros and cons, and I think in some cases you end up with states like, let's say, Louisiana, that is relying a little too much on the income.
Yeah,
because it's the state's economy is in trouble anyway, but you know, without, if they didn't have that business coming in, it could be really painful for them. So,
right.
But they're also giving out a lot of tax money, so it becomes this, you know, what are you gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
But still, he figured this out, and he figured out what he could do with it, and I gotta give him credit. He sat there and went, video game films are going to be, they have a built-in audience.
It's a niche.
And you sit there and go, I want to get some of those video game monies, and I'll do House of the Dead. And it got him noticed for being terrible, but it got him noticed. And then he wouldn't shut up.
Well, speaking of video game monies...
Yes, and shutting up.
Yes, we're going to do that, and we're going to let you hear from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com. They don't sell video games, but they do sell licensed merchandise where you
all
can give them
really cool stuff,
monies, and I think they've got some video game tie-in stuff over there. So we're going to let you hear from them. We're going to refill coffee mugs, and we will continue our discussion of the legendary Uwe Boll when H2O continues right after this. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio, because it's the second best invention in the history of the world.
Back in H2O, Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we are sitting across from our intern, Allie Ulrich, who is pushing all the buttons. She hasn't pushed my buttons yet.
It's
she's still on my good side.
It's early.
Yeah. Can we give it time? No. But as long as I got enough coffee in me, I think I'll be all right. Yeah. Maybe.
It's a good baseline.
Yes. Speaking of which, if you or anyone you know works for a coffee company, we would gladly take a sponsorship. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Uwe Boll, because I have a theory on how we could do a little bit more in the term in the way of film production, kind of like what he's doing. Because, you know, we don't have tax write-offs,
right?
You know, the tax things, but we could do product placement.
Sure. Uh huh.
You know, people give us money to put their stuff, what's in a movie,
right?
You know, and we make a film noir, and we want to have I don't know, what's something now that didn't exist back then.
The internet.
Yes, Google. If you want to give us money, we'll somehow figure out how to put it in.
That'll be a neo noir.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, because we could be selling Google goggles to kids.
Right.
And we put the Google, you know, the Google.
Sure,
thing in there.
Of course.
Sure,
yeah,
that'll work.
Well, we are. What we're basically saying is that we are for sale, and our prices are reasonable.
Just call 1-800. No, actually, we do have a hotline. It's 573-42-SCI-FI, which we don't promote very much, because when we do promote it, nobody calls it. And that should change.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
It'd be nice to get a message every now and then. Not the kind of message that Uwe Boll has left, though.
Oh, good Lord.
My goodness.
Yeah, his latest rant, because...
He's quit Hollywood.
People would not give, and Hollywood said you were here.
Who are you again?
Actually, there are some great quotes about people. He actually got into a war of words with, of all people.
Just one?
Of all people, he got into a war of words with a certain film director who... let's say, has his own track record for not necessarily the greatest of pictures, but gets funding, a certain fellow named Michael Bay.
I remember that.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, folks, the following is a quote.
Ish.
With probably a few minor modifications to meet
maintain our PG-13 rating.
Personal standards that we have tried to abide by. When he was doing the film Postal, Boll released a video saying that he was the only genius in the whole movie business, and that other directors like Michael Bay and Eli Roth are in retards.
Oh.
He promised that Postal was going to be better than any film starring George Clooney that was social.
And he laid in on Clooney on this last rant. He's got two videos on YouTube that are making the rounds in all of the media that's talking about him. We're not going to link to those.
Right.
There's plenty of opportunity that you can find them if you really want to look for them. One of them, he's talking about the Hollywood elite and the classist. Attitude, you know, that Hollywood is laughing at you, audience, because you're stupid and you just give them money because you're stupid and you have no appreciation for quality and, you know, you've been brainwashed by Hollywood to like George Clooney.
Considering if he's the alternative, if Boll is the alternative to this, then brainwash away, please. Michael Bay called, he heard about this, and he called Uwe Boll a sad being.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he doesn't care the slightest about the remark. And Eli Roth called it the best compliment ever.
I can imagine.
So, but...
You know.
Yeah.
There's a Star Wars movie that doesn't have a director yet.
Oh, wow. And this is how the Star Wars franchise was killed it.
Let's break the internet. Let's do a hashtag. Oh, wow. Who's going for Star Wars?
God, I don't want. We do not wish to be associated with this. This is a bad idea, but funny. It could be a lot of fun. But yeah, we don't.
Would they be better or not? Better than the prequels or worse than the prequels?
No, he's likely to put in a Jar Jar Binks. This is the guy who made Blubberella. This is a guy who...
That doesn't answer the question. Do you think it would be better or worse?
I think... Oh, God, that's a good question.
Although, now, we talk about the... We'll circle around on this. We talk about the Star Wars prequels for just a second. I ran across an article, and I've posted it over on our... internally among the team, because I think it would make a good group discussion among all of us for Echo Chamber. I ran across a theory. It's an essay on the entire six Star Wars films and this storytelling structure called the ring construction.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, right. Is a very, very specific style of storytelling and structuring your story in a specific way that parts of them mirror each other,
sure,
from the beginning to the end. As if you analyze the six films, they do follow the ring theory pretty closely, and it actually makes the whole six, all one film, more cohesive.
Hmm. We have to look at that.
And it's a really interesting read. I'm about a third of the way through it so far, but he's basically comparing the parallel structures and reversals and mm-hmm. the places where. This happened in Phantom Menace, and this happened in Return of the Jedi, and you look at them, and you put them side by side, and they're exact opposite mirrors of each other.
Oh, okay.
In terms of the camera shots, in terms of the story structure, all of this stuff. It's a fascinating read. So it actually may, not totally, but it may partially redeem the prequels for me.
I think it's
that interesting a theory, if it's true,
mm-hmm.
then it shows that George Lucas was a craftier storyteller than we give him credit for, which is not something we can say for Uwe Boll.
Well, I can to digress for just a second and go with something that is, generally speaking, much more fun to talk about. Well, less funny to talk about, I guess, is that when you look at a theory like that, when you look at the analysis like that, because there was just that film about the analysis of The Shining, about Stanley Kubrick's film.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory is really, really interesting. But the real question is when you go back and watch those films, does it make it better? Does the watching experience improve?
See, that's what I'm wondering.
And if it doesn't, it becomes a really kind of neat theory.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think that, we all have.
But in order to do that, you've got to watch all six of them all the way through.
Sure.
In order to really hold it and retain it and do the comparison and say, oh, yeah, this
probably,
I can see it.
Probably in like a day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd have to just do one right after the other, marathon it.
So.
And not the machete cut.
Right.
You'd have to watch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Right. Yep.
It would be interesting to test the theory. We
may have to do that. That could be a fun live tweeting event.
That could be.
That could be an interesting thing. Get some live footage and things like that. Some streaming stuff.
That could be. We could do that.
Yeah.
I'm aware. I'm playing with Periscope now that there's an Android version of that app. I've been exploring it just a little bit. We've been talking about maybe adding that to our repertoire of tools for doing stuff like red carpet premieres and that kind of thing. And it should be interesting. It might be something we could do.
Oh, yeah.
You know what we could do is we could do a contest. Send us your own Uwe Boll rant.
Yes.
No, don't.
No, don't do that. No. Unless it's really funny. So, but
did I just derail you?
You did. Oh, God. I just had a vision in my head.
Can you imagine Maya doing one of those?
Oh, that'd be awesome. I know. That's what I'm thinking. Cammy? That could be fun. Oh, that could be. Yeah, that could be just a trip.
It's just dangerously funny.
That could be very dangerously funny. They would have way too much fun with that. We could have way too much fun with that.
Oh, sure. Blame it all on cosplayers.
I would. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. No. It's just. He's. Bull did a really, really good job of marketing himself. He built an image
gotta give
for
him
himself.
Credit for that.
And he built an image for his films, even though they pretty much consistently... He was not... I want to say it was almost a losing half the budget every time. I think he would... You know, he'd end up with a film with like a $12 million budget, and then he'd lose seven. Or would make seven or something like that. Okay, House of the Dead, $12 million budget, made $6 million total, or made $6 million on its opening weekend. Alone in the Dark, $20 million, made $5 million. Blood Rain, $25 million, made $2.4 on opening weekend. Wow. In the Name of the King, a Dungeon Siege tale, had a $60 million budget. Guess how much it made worldwide?
Two.
Ten.
Well, that's better than two.
That's better than two. That's true. He only lost almost the entire budget of the film. Everything. So it's... the fact that he just seems to think that people are going to want to give him money. The fact that people actually did give him money. Because let's point that out. People actually gave him money for these things.
Repeatedly.
It may
not be the same person every film.
But they gave him money for these Kickstarter stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they actually gave him money.
Those are fans.
He has fans. Well, you know, and...
We have fans.
Yes, I know. And admittedly, no one has given us... We haven't actually tried to get that much money from our fans.
Well,
either.
We do have... We have gotten some donations over on our PayPal button, which is at scififorme.com and is in the right-hand column just at the top, near... Well, it's about middle of the page. It's above... What we call above the fold in internet speak, carryover from newspaper days. Those of you who may remember what newspapers are, you can explain it to the kid next to you. We do have something there, and we've been talking about some other different ways of funding some of our operations here, because we'd like to get to other conventions. We want to get out to more events and do that kind of thing. Plus, promotions cost money.
Yeah.
It costs money to tell people about us. We just spent money to enter into the Geeky Awards, so we'll find out July 15th whether we made the final cut or not for that. But that costs money. You know, everything costs money.
It's called economy.
Breathing doesn't cost money. That's the only thing I've run across so far that doesn't cost money.
It's early yet.
I know.
So someone has yet to find a way to fully monetize it.
Well. When the apocalypse hits.
Well, yeah, okay. You know, well, when the apocalypse hits.
Yeah, because we know that's going to happen.
Well, between that and the zombies. And the crowds of really, really cool vehicles tearing across the desert landscape and the hunt for oil and water.
Just remember, people, George Miller almost made Justice League.
I know.
Just think about that for a second.
And even though I have read the script for that leaked online and did not care for it much, I still kind of would want to see what he did with it.
Well, especially now that you've had time for people to see Fury Road, to see what he did going back to the Mad Max universe.
Yeah, but also it was his own universe.
Right. Well,
so
that's true.
I think that we've talked about this before, that you can have some people who, you know, the studio is going to have requests and requirements of you,
right? Because you got to fit into an overall shared
and,
universe.
You know, we lost a very, very popular director from Ant-Man, for that very, very reason. But
if you had the landscape, if you look at the landscape of the movie universe now, the comic book movie universe now, and dial it back 10 years, 15 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. Who's to say that Uwe Boll wouldn't have made one?
Well, honestly, he would have. I think just because he would have looked at it the same way he looked at video game films. I mean, it would fit into mm-hmm. what he was doing with this kind of story.
Sure. Uwe Boll makes The Tick.
Well, no, The Tick is awesome. No, The Tick needs a reboot of The Tick. We need a proper reboot. Do it as an animated picture.
Yep.
And keep Patrick Warburton as the voice.
Yep.
Because.
And Martin Freeman could play a sidekick. Because Martin Freeman's always the sidekick, right?
That would be great.
Or Arthur Darvill.
Oh, see, that would be so much fun. Arthur is Arthur?
Yeah.
See, but yeah, because...
No, nowadays you gender bend Arthur.
But you could. You could gender bend Arthur because the important part of Arthur is not that it's a guy. The important part about Arthur is that he's clearly, you know, he wants to be a superhero in a way that he's clearly not.
Yeah. Could be anybody.
That could be anybody. That's all of us, really. So I mean, you could make that part feel without hurting the, but you would need to keep your superhero parodies the same. You'd have to have the Wonder Woman parody. You'd want to keep as the Wonder Woman parody. You'd want to embrace those because those are so much fun. And Phil, note, folks, we kind of we got Uwe Boll is over here, and we're kind of talking around him. because in some degrees it's kind of sad. All right,
he's an ugly man.
Well, yeah,
and I don't mean physically. I mean, just in terms of personality, and
right?
And half of it's got to be an act, but you know.
Well, he's certainly a good marketer.
The manufactured persona.
But the thing is that he really, in some ways, he started something that is unfortunate because he named the last good video game film. And I am not going to lay all the history of bad video game movies at the feet of Boll. I'm not.
Right.
But because I mean, he didn't make Mario Brothers.
I thought Final Fantasy was pretty good.
Final Fantasy was really, really interesting. But in many, many ways, it was not really an adaptation of the source material, or at least that source material up until that point.
Right.
And so it really, a lot of fans thought it was looked really cool, but they weren't satisfied with it as an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I think you run into that. Okay, obviously, you run into what the fans want versus what the studio makes. And it's like Mario Brothers.
Versus the general audience.
Right.
Yeah.
Mario Brothers is a great example, one of the early video game films.
Mm-hmm.
What does it have in common with the game?
The name.
There you go. Does it have a fantastic cast?
Oh, yes.
Yes. It's an amazing cast.
Awesome cast.
But it is completely Dennis Hopper and John Leguizamo.
Bob
Hoskins.
Yeah.
It's an amazing cast. And it's a misfire on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really interesting. I mean, visually, it's very creative, but it has nothing to do with the game. So it's hardly, you know, he saw that, I mean, the explosion of home video games, because, you know, Mario Brothers was still a console, you know, that was go to the arcade.
Yeah.
So he did see that this was something that was actually happening, but he was not very respectful of his fans either. Of the audience when it came to these films, you know, because he would hear the fan complaints and he'd be like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. This is a great movie. And, you know,
And somebody thought so because they let him make another one.
Well, but again, you know, he found the financial way to do it. And if you go to, we watch this happen all the time, is that you could have a really, really good film that does not get box office.
Right. John Carter.
And it murders the franchise. That director might not work again, or not work for a while, or might not work for that studio.
Right.
Well,
we saw that with Green Lantern.
Sure.
Green Lantern almost, well, it didn't kill the DC shared universe, but
it injured it.
It hobbled it quite a bit because all of a sudden Man of Steel was the first one in the universe and Green Lantern wasn't anymore.
Yeah,
which is fine because it was a terrible movie,
and
ambitious but terrible.
Yeah, well, and and we've talked about this before too. You need to figure out what film you're making,
mm-hmm.
and if you're making, it's kind of like watching you're watching the last two Batman films, not the one starred by Burton. So you have your
Batman and Robin, Batman Forever.
Right. You look at those films, you know, they couldn't decide what they were making. Because you had two certainly elements of camp in the Burton films, but they were really serious and dark.
Yeah, they were.
And by the third film, we're starting to creep into, you know,
The silly.
And by the fourth film, we're like in pure blown camp.
Yeah, well, Batman and Robin, and I've seen some interviews with, I mean, everybody that's involved in that thing has acknowledged, one, that it was a terrible movie.
Sure.
Two, it was the studio's fault.
Yeah.
It was the, it was the marketing and merchandising division's fault.
Well, because the entire film was marketing and merchandising.
Exactly. It was a toy commercial.
Yeah.
And that's what it was for. And that's what, and Schumacher has even said, you know, the studio kept coming down with, put this in, because we want to sell the toy. Which is a terrible reason to make any kind of movie.
Well, sure, but we also sit there and see, you know, like this, Spider-Man films.
How many times have we run into that attitude still? Because how many cartoons... Young Justice,
yeah, sure.
Green Lantern Animated Adventures, any of that stuff that's on Saturday morning and on Cartoon Network, how much of that has been canceled because the girls are watching and they don't buy the toys?
Right, yeah.
Which is stupid.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, and well, we've
said it is.
We've had some lovely rants that we should probably link to about this, because this is not a new thing that ticks us off.
No, but it's time filler for the exes. See, this is how we
this is how we pad our time.
This is how we fill time, and we get to the hour. And
but it becomes this, you end up not really caring what the audience wants. You're caring about what you're selling.
Yeah,
And Bowell is just as guilty of that as anybody else. You look at the films that he made, and you look at the films he wrote, or even the ones he didn't direct. I have read that he loves movies. I've read that he is passionate about making films.
Well, and he's got to be if he's making all of these movies that don't make any money, and he keeps doing it.
But that doesn't mean he's a good filmmaker.
No.
And it doesn't mean he's a good person, because if his public persona is who he is, then he's kind of awful.
Even if it's a reflection or an exaggeration of who he is, he's awful.
Well, and if it's an act, then well played, sir. You've played that part for a very, very long time.
Why would you create a public persona like that if that's not who you really are?
Well, I think that if you end up getting publicity, you end up getting... But the thing is that it hasn't helped. I mean, it's not... You're not going to... And certainly...
Although we've spent an hour talking about him.
Yeah, that's true. But we also... We were caught... But that was... His rant was so funny. And it was so... And it was...
It was crazy.
It was unhinged. And... But it's also something where, you know, you look, one of the things that you have to do, especially in what we do, we write articles and we do podcasts and we do videos and we do these things, and we look at what people pay attention to. We look what people like, and we listen to our audience and sit there and say, we like this. You know, ooh, I like this review.
Yes.
You know, please, I want to read more of this. Or you know, we get feedback from our folks, and we figure out what works and doesn't work. And hopefully we get better every time we do things.
One would hope.
Or at least we maintain a level of quality which is acceptable.
we stay adequate.
Right. We would like to be. We want to be good. We want to be better. But
that takes money.
Well, yeah. We want. Okay. There's degrees of better. But we hope we're improving all the time, right? Because that's what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
But we also are aware that sometimes we don't always get it right. And you learn from the mistakes, and you sit there and hopefully make something better. And you don't get that. You get this sense of, you know, it's everybody's fault but mine that I wasn't given this money. It's the stupid...
I'm sorry you don't get it.
Exactly. Yep. And it's like, well, hang on. How does this, you know... You made House of the Dead, man. You made House of the Dead 2.
And that dovetails into a completely other topic that we could get into at some point, which is trusting your audience, which is you know, having not only trusting your audience to understand what you're trying to do with the film, but also having the respect for your audience to give them a quality picture, something that actually, one, tells a good story, two, mm-hmm. is executed well. And that's something we probably want to look at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're out of time on this one.
What?
Yes! It goes by so fast.
We spent this long talking about... Well, actually, we digressed a lot.
We did. I still want to see Uwe Boll make Star Wars movie now.
But you know what? I think, would he be able to top Hardware Wars? And for the
or the holiday special?
Ooh, could he top Thumb Wars?
You know, I never saw Thumb Wars.
Did you not?
I did.
Oh, see,
you'll have to send me a link,
folks. If you have never seen Hardware Wars
or the holiday special,
then you were clearly not a teenager in the '80s.
I have a copy of Hardware Wars. The special edition.
Oh, my.
The digitally enhanced with the new special effects and all that. I have that. I want to find a copy of the original comparison.
In the 1980s, we didn't have, you know, Comic-Con and Worldcon and all this stuff, the really big ones, mm-hmm. right? This is not what was around in the 80s. You had much smaller cons.
You had tiny ones.
And they were very, very niche, and they were very, very male.
Yeah.
And it was the 80s. It was a different time.
I kind of want to make a Hardware Wars now.
See?
You know?
But Hardware Wars was great. And you would go to these cons, and you would get... There would be a video room. At least one. There would be a video room. And they would be playing so many of these little films. You get... it'd be like the entire season. The entire series of Quark.
Or Red Dwarf.
Or you'd be watching second Doctor Who episodes.
Oh yeah.
You know, maybe some John Pertwee would be thrown, because everybody knew who Tom Baker was, but it's like there were other Doctors before him. What? So you'd have things like Hardware Wars that would pop up and be like, this is amazing. And huge crowds for a film that was made on, like, I don't know, Bug 65.
I'm tempted now to try to make a Star Wars movie in the style of Uwe Boll.
Oh, wow.
Why don't we do that? Let's start working on that. We'll get Dustin to write it.
this will be so much fun. And
we'll do that. We'll do that right after we finish with Zombie Guppies.
We could get burned in effigy.
Yeah. That would have happened already if that was going to happen. Okay, that's going to do it for us. We are going to head out this week. I want to thank our producer, Allie Ulrich.
Thank you.
Pushing the buttons in the right sequence there and making
us
sound good.
She's been laughing at us the whole time.
Yeah, you know, I'm used to it now.
She hasn't been pointing, though.
No.
She hasn't been pointing and laughing, which is I really appreciate.
That's
a lot.
That's
coming. That too much.
Yes. And we do encourage you to visit our sponsor, superherostuff.com. We want to thank them for their continued support. And also,
all sorts of neat stuff over there.
I think we could probably say thank you to our audience, both here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio, and I guess we could call it the Sci-Fi for Me Radio Network, because we are syndicated over on Amazing Stories Magazine.
We
website.
Are, yes.
AmazingStoriesMag.com. Mm-hmm. We do encourage you to go over there and check out some of their articles. Very interesting stuff over there.
Oh, yeah.
Both in English and in Spanish.
Yes, yes.
And as we're wrapping up here, I get an email. We're on media list. No, it's not really about it. It's the next best thing.
Oh, yeah?
Lloyd Kaufman from Troma Entertainment.
Seriously?
Apparently has posted a parody rant. I haven't watched it yet. But the link here is click here to see Lloyd go ballistic.
Of course. Sure. Uh-huh.
See a thankful Lloyd. Well, there's expletives in there. See a thankful Lloyd in this Uwe Boll parody, part of Troma's Return to Nukem High Volume 2 Kickstarter campaign. Now, for those of you who don't know, Lloyd Kaufman is with Troma Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And he is kind of this, he's kind of like, I don't want to say he's the Roger Corman of now, but very, very B movie schlock stuff. I mean, Nukem High is.
Toxic Avenger and Romeo and Juliet. And
this is stuff that's, you know, this is the B, this is probably C or D level.
But it's aware. Driving. I mean, there's, you know, Lloyd and I've
on
met.
Purpose.
I've met Lloyd, and he is a super nice guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's very much, he's very much aware, and it's very much on purpose.
But the background on this picture is the same as. What's on Uwe Boll's videos?
Yeah.
And Lloyd Kaufman's wearing a bald cap.
Okay, sure.
A very obvious bald cap. This, I think, could be funny. We'll have to look at this when we get off the air. So we're going to go look at that and probably do a couple of spit takes in our coffee. And you, in the meantime, can leave us a comment. Let us know what your favorite Uwe Boll movie is. And you can do that by leaving a comment, or you can send us an email, h2o@sci-fi-for-me.com. You can find us on all the social media, except MySpace. And if you're listening to this because somebody shared a link with you and you'd like to subscribe, there are a couple of ways you could do it. You could do it on the page over at sci-fi-for-me.com. You can find us on iTunes and a number of different podcast apps for your Android device. And that's going to do it for us this week. I want to thank our producer, Allie Ulrich, for making sure that everything goes the right direction there on the electronics and the computers, because it is Tuesday when we're recording.
That's
true. You know how Tuesdays are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to do it for us. Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Jason Hunt, and we will be back with another episode of H2O next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.